I can always tell when there's been a quinceañera here or a blessing for one, because there are sparkles just like all over the front of the sanctuary here from a dress that I saw. So that must have happened sometime this weekend that I did not see. When I was thinking about today as we celebrate St. John de Brebeuf and Isaac Jogues and their companions who were martyred, I thought about one of my times back in the seminary. I can't exactly remember when, but seminarians and priests and might I even say deacons, we're just kind of religious nerds. We really are, and it's always very evident in the seminary, because when everybody's sitting around eating at meals, I would often wonder, I would be like, there's just nowhere else would people be having this conversation that we're having right now. And I could recall one particular time where we were talking about, you know, like in Rome, of course, we're surrounded by martyrs. So maybe it was during Lent when we go to the station churches to so many of the martyrs, early martyrs of Rome's churches. And, you know, somebody had said something to the effect of, you know, gosh, well, you know, if we were being, you know, persecuted and everything, would you willingly step forward, you know, be martyred? And another guy was just like, well, of course. And so somebody else says, well, why? He goes, he's like, because I don't want to be and companions. And so it was just like one of the funniest things I ever heard, because you always hear the first person's name. So he's like, I'm going to be the first person to step forward because I don't want to be one of the and companions. I want to be the first guy. And so every time I see a list of and companions, I sort of always laugh about the guy who said that one day. And, you know, they were, of course, great examples. They came from, they were French Jesuits that came to Quebec and we're working with the Native Americans, and specifically the Huron tribe, and then basically the Iroquois were the enemies of the Huron tribe, and eventually they end up being martyred in some of the clash between the tribes and everything like that. But it said that St. John de Brebeuf converted like 7,000 Native Americans to Catholicism or something like that. So really a great number of people. But today, as I often do, you know, we hear really the same theme that we've been hearing, of course, for at least a week or so, about Jesus kind of giving us this example of putting our eggs into the basket of the kingdom of heaven and not of the things of this earth, and not trying to build up these treasures, because, you know, like naked we come into this world and naked we will leave. We cannot take it with us, so it's kind of foolish to put too much stock into material things in this world. But what we often talk about is the way to put our sort of stock into heaven, into the spiritual realm, is prayer. And it's tough because we sometimes just say prayer, but we don't always really talk about or describe what that actually means. And so today in the Office of Readings, the second reading is from a letter to Proba by St. Augustine. So Proba was the widow of one of the richest men in the Roman Empire at the time. And so he's writing a letter to her because she was asking about prayer. So one of the faithful of God asking about prayer. And it's very, very insightful. And I figured, especially for those who come to daily Mass on a regular basis, I think that sometimes the integration of prayer might even be a little bit more prevalent in your life, so it's always helpful to have tips on prayer, and I thought that this was really insightful, so I want to read it for you all today. Let us always desire the happy life from the Lord God and always pray for it. But for this very reason, we turn our mind to the task of prayer at appointed hours, since that desire grows weak, grows lukewarm, so to speak, from our involvements in other concerns and other occupations. We remind ourselves through the words of prayer to focus our attention on the object of our desire. Otherwise, the desire that began to grow lukewarm may grow chill altogether and may be totally extinguished unless it is repeatedly stirred into flame. Therefore, when the Apostle says, "Let your petitions become known before God," this should not be taken in the sense that they are in fact becoming known to God, who certainly knew them even before they were made, but that they are becoming known before men through boasting. Since this is the case, it is not wrong or useless to pray even for a long time when there is the opportunity. I mean when it does not keep us from performing the other good and necessary actions we are obliged to do. But even in these actions, as I have said, we must always pray with that desire. To pray for a longer time is not the same as to pray by multiplying words, as some people suppose. Lengthy talk is one thing. A prayerful disposition which lasts a long time is another. For it is even written in reference to the Lord himself that he spent the night in prayer and that he prayed at great length. Was he not giving us an example by this? In time, he prays when it is appropriate, and in eternity, he hears our prayers with the Father. The monks in Egypt are said to offer frequent prayers, but these are very short and hurled like swift javelins. Otherwise, their watchful attention, a very necessary quality for anyone at prayer, could be dulled and could disappear through protracted delays. They also clearly demonstrate through this practice that a person must not quickly divert such attention if it lasts, just as one must not allow it to be blunted if it cannot last. Excessive talking should be kept out of prayer, but that does not mean that one should not spend much time in prayer, so long as fervent attitude continues to accompany his prayer. To talk at length in prayer is to perform a necessary action with an excess of words. To spend much time in prayer is to knock with a persistent and holy fervor at the door of the one whom we beseech. This task is generally accomplished more through sighs than words, more through weeping than speech. He places our tears in his sight, and our sighs are not hidden from him, for he has established all things through his word. It does not seek human words. I think through that, I heard just the other day, I was listening to something that Mother Angelica, they're talking about, had that experience in prayer where she looked down at her watch and she thought it had only been, you know, maybe minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, and it had been 4 hours. And so this example that Augustine gives, that sometimes length of time in prayer, when it's focused in the right direction, is a beautiful thing. But saying lots of stuff, you know, in prayer does not make good prayer necessarily. And so he really tells us in a practical way too. A great saint like Augustine tells us in a practical way that you can spend as much time in prayer as you can, provided that you're taking care of all the obligations that you're supposed to be taking care of. So if we have these moments where we can spend time, and we have that time, and it's not sort of idle time, sitting there almost like idle prayer, then we should take those opportunities, but not at the expense of what we're obliged to do, like taking care of families, taking care of loved ones, you know, the jobs that we do to take care of our family and ourselves. But I think it was just a great reflection on prayer from St. Augustine sometimes about some things that we battle with in our own prayer life. God bless you all today.